Welcome, friends. You're tuned into CorbettReport.com, and it is the third day of October 2011, and I am being joined on the line by our regular monthly guest, who has just turned into our regular weekly guest, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster at intforecaster.com. And by popular demand, and of course, by my own general interest, we've got Bob Chapman's insights and analysis into all things economic, financial, social, and political, now on a weekly basis, coming to you every single Monday. So I know a lot of people are excited about that. I've gotten a lot of emails about that, so I'm excited too. So Bob Chapman, thanks as always for taking time to talk with us.
Well, it's not easy to get excited early Monday morning. But with that said, there's so much going on in the world today. It's just incredible. And we've just had a whole week of demonstrations about people talking about and demonstrating about Wall Street and the capitalist system.
That's exactly right. And it is on the tip of the tongue of the collective alternative media, so to speak. And there seems to be, I think, a bifurcation going on in the narrative. There are the people who are arguing that this is all controlled opposition. And then there are those who are arguing that this is a hopeful sign that people are starting to finally identify where the real problems are coming from. So what's your take on it?
Well, I don't think at this point anybody knows. Some of the original planners of this have backgrounds which are very leftist, communist, socialist, Marxist-Leninist, liberal, and that side of the spectrum, but they have since been joined by others who are in mainstream and many who are to the right as well. What it has triggered, no matter how it came about, is that there's a lot of really disgruntled people out there. And, you know, Wall Street poo-poos this picture of themselves, when in fact, all too many of them are crooks. I know, I've been there, I did that. And so I think it could be the mainspring of more demonstrations, and I understand that they're having them in a number of cities as well. And so I look at it this way. It's a good thing as long as people do not violate the law. I see that they arrested, I don't know, it was 70 or 700 on the Brooklyn Bridge. I didn't know it could hold that many people. It's an old bridge. If you've ever been over it,
it is a little bridge, but it was absolutely jam-packed with people. And the reports that are now coming out is that the police actually lured them onto the bridge and then closed in on them and started arresting people, anyone who was on the bridge. So the idea seems to be that they brought them there. But of course, the media is only showing the fact that they were on the bridge as if they were trying to block traffic or whatever.
Right, and of course, blocking traffic is serious, but it's not world-ending. People couldn't get to work, and that's unfortunate. But on a weekend, you don't have an awful lot of people going to work. Most of them are doing other things. And I can believe that the New York Police Department was instructed to do that. Maybe they just wanted to tell people that if you're going to come here and you're going to disrupt things, you're going to get fined, because that's essentially what it amounts to, because they'll arrest them and it's a misdemeanor, and they fine them, I don't know, in New York probably $500. They need the money badly. But I do think it's positive. As I've said during the last week, you know, your enemy's enemy is your friend. And if the mainstream populace is unwilling to get out on the street until somebody else does it, and these people did it, and they were allowed to join it, I think that's a good thing. And I think there should be more of them. And it sure beats what we just saw throughout England, where they not only demonstrate, they burn down everything they think they can get away with and steal as much as they can. And so this certainly is preferential to what we saw over there.
I concur wholeheartedly with that analysis, because it seems to me that absolutely what happened in London was just a travesty and was disgusting. And the fact that that's not happening so far in these protests is what I think is the hopeful sign. And also, I'd go even further than the enemy's enemy is the friend. I think what this revolutionary fervor that it seems to be shaping up right now, what it indicates is the fact that we are in this stage where people can be at least reached on this level and can be motivated into action. And I think obviously there are going to be people from all over, from different spectrums and perspectives, and coming from different angles. And, you know, there are going to be the people who are demanding, you know, some kind of communist handout of money from the government and things like that. But I think this presents an opportunity for the activists who are in there, who know about the Federal Reserve System and the fraud that is at the base of the entire economy, to use this as an educational opportunity and to try to steer this revolutionary fervor to something that's actually productive. So instead of dismissing it or trying to disengage from it, I think more people should be trying to engage with this and trying to educate people about the real root of the problem.
Well, I think that the people who think that it is a PSYOP and a government-sponsored event, it's okay for them to say that, but they have to have proof of that. And if they don't, they have to say, I'm guessing, but this could be. And I think that's very important, because, you know, these people go off and say things on the internet as well as on the radio without any backing whatsoever. And I'm always careful not to do that. Every once in a while, you're going to get entrapped in something that's not true, and then you have to apologize. You can't be right all the time. But these people should have a reason why, if they, you know, think it was a put-up job. And thus far, I haven't seen any proof. Have you?
Well, I believe that people are now looking and scrutinizing the roots of the protest in Adbusters and looking at its foundation funding and ties to Soros-backed groups and things like that, which, I think it's fair enough to do that. But I think the answer isn't just to, anytime we smell the whiff of Soros involved in something, to just disengage with it and let him do what he wants to do. I think the point is for us to go in there and add our voices to that mix, because no matter who's starting it or fomenting it or funding it, it's still a movement of real human beings who can be reached and educated. And if we can get them to see what the real problem is, this can be a chance to actually do something productive instead of, you know, the usual types of protests, which usually end up in only more clampdown and calamity.
Well, if Soros was behind it, and that's possible, he made a terrible mistake. And, you know, he's not beyond making mistakes. He makes plenty of them. You just don't hear about them. And two of them were he was convicted of rigging stock markets, both in France and in Hungary, which nobody ever talks about. This guy is a convicted felon. I don't care whether he's a billionaire or not. The guy is a scumbag. And in France, he went to the appeals court. They said, no, you're guilty. We're not going to change the verdict. Now he's gone to the UN saying he's being persecuted. Well, I don't know what his basis is, but he was the one who marched around as a young Jewish person, collected Jewish people before they shipped them off to camps to be exterminated and relieved them of their valuables. Real nice guy. And incidentally, he said that that was one of the most enjoyable times of his life. I mean, what kind of a evil person is this person?
Absolutely. And for anyone who would doubt that, I really hope that they'll go and check out that 60 Minutes interview that they did, where they asked him about his actions during that time, and where he had not only admitted to it, but said that he had absolutely no regrets about what he did. And I think that's when we start to realize what kind of character we're dealing with here.
That's right.
Indeed. Well, certainly and absolutely, there's no doubt that Soros and his founded groups have been behind these types of color revolution in country after country before. So I think, again, it could be a fruitful way to look at the roots of this and how it's developing. But just to my mind, I think there's something more important going on here. And I think we have to not just wash our hands of it, but actually try to shape what's happening instead of just leaving it for Soros to do as he will.
Well, again, I think he's made a mistake if it is he who is behind it. And I think that the other sources of psyops that we see that have come to light just recently, and one of the programs which I do every couple of weeks, the moderator's site was email bombed, and all sorts of nasty things were put on there, including me. Government never ceases to pursue me. And his webmaster was able to trace the email bombs back to the Bank of America in northern New Jersey. And there's no question it's a government operation, because the Bank of America would have no reason otherwise to do such things. And so we know that there is a government program of attacking people. And I've been email bombed before, incidentally, several times, but it's fairly easy to stop. But the point is that they even did it. And so this shows you they're desperate, and they do have secret forces doing these things, which they're not supposed to be doing. Of course, government today does what they want to do, and whether you like it or not.
Well, I think that's a self-evident truth, that basically they're going to do what they're going to do, and it's not a question of the buy-in for the people anymore, if it ever truly was. All right, well, I guess casting the net a bit wider, I think ultimately what these protests mean and what they signify is the fact that there is growing discontent among the public with the economic system as a whole. And I notice on the Forecaster this week you have an article about how the $400 billion that was just wrangled over and agonized over has already been spent in what, 6 weeks? That's pretty amazing.
It certainly is, and they allocated them another $500 billion. And there's no end to it. And you're seeing the same thing in Europe. You know, the politicians say, yes, we did vote to extend the amount of money that could be used by the EFSF, which is a financial stability fund, to bail out nations that have financial problems, such as Greece. But it'll be interesting to see how long the money lasts. It was about a little under $500 billion. I was writing about it this morning for the next issue. And I think they're going to find that the money's probably not going to last very long. And what do they do next? Because the German Bundestag adamantly said, no, we're not going to do that anymore, because 75% of the people don't want us to do that anymore. So these people either shape up, or we don't give them any money, any further funds. And, you know, it's the same thing in America. And they're going to be back at the trough again. I mean, can you imagine that the president wants to increase spending like $447 billion, I think the figure is. And at the same time, they have to cut $1.3 trillion or something of that order with the Debt Extension Act. And where are they going to get it? Well, most of it's going to come from cuts in Social Security and Medicare, which people paid for. It's not a government gift. It's not something that was legislated as opposed to being paid for. And why are they doing that? Well, yes, they would like the money to move it from place A and B to C and D. But more importantly, they want to destroy Social Security and Medicare as it stands presently. And they also wanted to create their enabling Super Congress Committee, which is very much the same as what was given in 1933 in the Enabling Act by the National Socialists to Adolf Hitler, who became dictator, because he was able to bypass Congress. And so we get the same situation in America today. But that's why they were doing what they were doing. They could have passed the extension in 15 minutes.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, what we're dealing with is this political theater that continues to go on and on and on and gain so much of our attention and interest, whereas I think the real action is happening behind the scenes, behind the curtains, where people are directed not to look.
That's correct. And you have a plethora of foundations, which are tax-free, who push toward a one-world movement and all the ancillary things that go along with it. And then you have the think tanks that we know nothing about or very little about. And then you have all of these groups, such as the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission. And these are the people who are behind all this. These are the people who buy politicians in every country in the world. And unfortunately, people are purchasable. And historically, that's always been true. Not all of them, but too many of them. And so we see a reflection here of a journey to a place that we don't want to go to, but these others want us to go to, like world government. And so that's why you're seeing all these things. And if you study the history of the people who are involved and have been involved in these movements historically, it's very simple to figure out what they're doing, why they're doing it, and where they're going. And I find it mystifying that intelligent people, many of them financial letter writers, don't seem to see this. I don't know, maybe they didn't study it. Maybe they didn't look into it. But if they didn't, they're sure missing the boat, because this is the very basis and genesis of what's going on. There is no other explanation. People are hurting the world, and a very small amount of people are hurting the world toward something that they understand and they think is better for the people than what they have. And of course, it leads to enslavement.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly the point. And since I have no doubt that a lot of letter writers do listen to your various appearances and read your newsletter, why don't we educate them a little about some of the people who are involved in that history, that suppressed history that you're talking about?
Well, I wish they would, because it would make my job very much easier. And they would have to admit that there are ulterior forces doing things that they should not be doing. And they've got to come to terms with it and then have the guts to talk about it. And very few people want to be thought of in an ill manner, and among their peers especially, like saying that I'm a very good newsletter writer or commentator as an individual, each one. And they want to be accepted. Well, my attitude through my entire life is, I really don't care who likes me, who accepts me. I say it the way I think it is, and if it isn't, I'm wrong once in a while. I've been a pretty lucky guy in figuring this thing out, and especially in the markets. And hopefully they would do the same and stick their neck out a little. And then you know something? I'd really be able to retire.
Yeah, imagine that, an actual retirement.
I'd probably die for lack of anything to do.
Well, exactly. I don't think you'll ever retire, will you? But that's a good thing, because we don't want you to. Well, all right, well, let's move on, because actually this week I wanted to try to cover something slightly different. We often cover politics, economics, and finance, which are, of course, three of the main themes of the International Forecaster, but there are other topics besides that you cover, and one of them is health freedom, alternative health, that sort of topic. And I suppose it's absolutely fundamental to a lot of what we do, and it's a fundamental part of the daily things that we consume and where we shop, and all it relates to so many of the topics, but it's not something that we often give explicit coverage to. So let's talk a little bit about that, especially from your own perspective as a man of advancing years, shall we say. I know that health issues become more and more important, but you're obviously a man of incredible mental and physical health for a man of your years. So tell us a little bit about your take on health freedom and where we stand today on those issues.
Well, my predecessors in my family, so to speak, usually lived between 85 and 92 years old. And so genetically they were strong, and some have lived to be 105 and 108, and that is unusual. I remember seeing my aunt's mother at 108, and I hope the Lord takes me before then, because she was just a pile of bones, and she died shortly thereafter. But with the genetic approach addressed, how do you take care of yourself? Well, you never know when you're going to get ill and why. I suppose they could check you out and find out that there's a good chance you'll have this, that, and the other thing. But the first line of defense started for myself and my wife, Judith, in 1964. And we became involved in taking vitamins. And we also branched out into herbs and hormones as well. And we've been doing that all these years. I'm sitting here, I have 10, 20, about 60 of these, we'll call them pills, sitting here for me to take today. And I take all kinds of things. And I think it certainly has added to my mental and physical acuity at this stage in life. And my wife is, she works as hard, as long every day as I do, which is usually 16, sometimes 18 hours. And enmeshed in that is the radio programs, which vary from 30 to 45 a week. But they usually average around 35 to 40. And I manage to fit them in. I do most of my writing between 4 and 7 in the morning. And because I find that that's the best time of day. And, of course, that means I go to sleep at 9 o'clock at night. So taking all those things, I think, is important if one can afford to do so. And we've done it a long time, and I can't help but think it's contributed to the way we are today.
I have no doubt about that. I'm sure that that must be the case, because one of the things that strikes me is that there's such a backlash against these types of things. And of course, we see now with the creeping coming of Codex Alimentarius to try to outlaw the taking of vitamins and minerals and supplements, and trying to basically make sure that all such things in the future will be only dispensed by accredited government-approved agencies. I mean, we really are moving into Orwellian situations, and it starts off, I think, in a innocuous enough way, but it becomes more and more blatant. And we've seen that in recent times with the raw milk raids and others, where the government is becoming more and more authoritarian and trying to clamp down on all sorts of things, and basically telling people what they can and cannot put into their own bodies. So what's your take on health freedom issues and where we stand on that front today?
Well, I started writing about Codex 20 years ago, when there were only a handful of people talking about it, and it was something close to what I was doing, close to my heart, so to speak. And I found it outrageous that they were trying to do something like that. And I knew it had been much further advanced in Europe, because there were many things you couldn't get there, and the prices were atrocious. And, of course, for the most part, the things that people wanted to take was, let's say, like vitamin E. They were made by pharmaceutical companies. So I knew that Big Pharma wanted to take over the business of supplements many years ago. And this is what it's come down to. And, you know, what they are trying to do is two things: increase the prices, and they take over all the business. At the same time, if you can't afford it, well, that means you're probably not a superior producer, so you may as well die. So it's a way of reducing population earlier. And you see the reflection of that in the Obama health care bill, which will have panels and the panels will decide what modalities of treatment people will get, or maybe they won't get any at all. I think that in hospitals today in the United States, but even more so elsewhere, particularly in Europe, decisions are being made by people in the medical field. Well, he's lived his life, and he's got such and such, and why bother to treat it? Let's just let it take its course, and he'll be dead in 6 months. And that's been going on for a long time. I saw them try it in my own family, with my my father and my mother both. And I told both doctors in both instances, if you do that, you're not going to be practicing much longer. And I think they got the message. And so they were allowed to live much longer than perhaps they should have if they had been allowed in the hospitals to pull the plug. And so that's what government wants to do. The useless eaters, let's get them out of the way. So if you're not healthy, then you have a problem. And the government can say, well, gee, that's going to cost us $500,000 a year. Over the next 10 years, we can't afford that. Or even $50,000 a year, we can't afford that. So give this person placebos, doctor. And if you speak out about it, they will fine you the first time. And the second time you do it, you go to jail. This is in the law, incidentally. And so I think part and parcel of what is being committed against people's freedom here is not only that the great profit involved for the pharmaceutical companies, which are controlled totally from behind the scenes by the foundations. The Rockefellers are big investors in the pharma industry and many others. And for those of you who don't know, what they do is they set their profit increases each year at 18%, which is rather high. And they do that by doing all sorts of things I won't get into here. But the main thing is they would like to take over that industry. And so in doing so, they would make a lot more money, and they would control it. And the people who didn't have the money couldn't take these supplements, and they'd probably get ill quicker or more often. And then they can just do away with them if they're not producing anymore.
Well, I think another related aspect to all of this, of course, is the food aspect. What we're able to eat is an incredibly important part of who we are, as the old saying goes. And of course, there's the famous Kissinger quote about control oil and you control nations, control food and you control the people. And on that note, of course, we've seen with the from the time of the Green Revolution in the 60s, which again was funded completely by the Rockefellers and manipulated by the large corporations, down to the Gene Revolution today and the GM technologies, which again are being basically spread around the world at the force of a gun in a lot of places. We see, again, encroaching invasion of the most, one of the most sanctified, one of the most important parts of our entire existence, what we put into our bodies on a daily basis, our food. And we see the poisoning of the food supply. And again, it seems to come back time and again to the depopulation urge and the eugenics urge of the people at the very top of the system.
I agree with you, and I think they realize that in Europe, but they haven't got too far with it in fighting GMO. It's a big part of the agenda of the elitist who are the power behind what goes on in the world. And I've seen and heard in publications and in speaking various people who are that genre, and they say, well, 60% of the people shouldn't really be around because we don't need them. And I saw Ted Turner a couple of months ago on CNN say 90%. So maybe he's more wacko than the other ones. But anyway, no wonder Jane Fonda left him. If you thought she was wacko, he's really far out. But anyway, the point here is that they have admitted over and over again that they want population control. And there has been books written about the subject. The famous 6-6 book, it was written in 1966 about regional government, which also included this. And, you know, I've been involved in this for over half a century, and it's old hat to me, but it's new to a lot of people, most people. And that is that these people are actually planning to do these things. You talk about GMO products, you know, what can they put into products that's worse than what we're eating already? And you'll find, too, if you go into places like Asia and Latin America, that so far they don't have much of that, if any. And you'll find that most things are naturally grown. And so I guess the people who live in those countries, will say Chile or Argentina or Costa Rica, in part, even in Mexico, you can get vegetables and other produce partially, if not totally, free of the things that we don't want to put in our body. And most people don't realize that. But otherwise, everybody's being subjected to it.
Unfortunately so. So I guess the answer, again, is solutions that can actually work for the people. And I think, once again, the freedom is kind of like a muscle, and if we don't flex it and if we don't continue to use it, we're just going to atrophy and we're not going to be able to fight back against the system, which is why I think resistance of all forms is a hopeful sign of some kind, even if it is manipulated resistance, like some people are alleging with the Wall Street protests. But again, we have to fight back on every front. So in terms of reclaiming our freedom and staking back our spot in the economy and in our, even what goes into our own bodies, I think an important part of that, of course, is to control what goes into our minds and to detach ourselves from the mainstream corporate-controlled media system, which is trying to indoctrinate us on a daily basis. And, of course, an important part of that is the alternative media and alternative newsletters like the International Forecaster. So tell us again about the Forecaster and how people can get a copy.
Well, the Forecaster is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. Published Wednesday and Saturday by email, runs around 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month as well for those who are not on the internet. Everything you need to know each week is in that publication, and you can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FOREcaster.com, or to www.intforecaster.com, intforecaster.com. For those of you who like to ask a question, and yes, we do answer everyone, I can truly attest to that. And if you'd like a copy, or if you'd like a copy of our latest recommendations on gold and silver shares, you can email us, and that address is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com, Bob at intforecaster.com. And for those of you who would like to call toll-free, that number is 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. You can get a copy there of either the email or hard copy edition. And for those of you who would like to become subscribers, they are offering a full 1-year subscription free. And the offer that they're making is extremely good. It's terrific. You should take advantage of it.
And I certainly hope people will. So any preview about what's coming out in the next edition of the Forecaster?
I talk about, I just came out on Saturday and talked about what happened in Europe. And I'm going to talk on Wednesday's issue, which I just finished this morning, in there, about myriad financial and monetary things. And the following, I'm going to talk a lot about the future Oh, the European Union, the Eurozone, the bailouts, the euro itself. I really believe it's doomed. I think the Swiss made a terrible mistake devaluing their currency. I don't know what they were thinking about or what they were smoking, but it wasn't a very good thing to do, because if the euro goes down, they got to go down with it. And that's not a very tasteful thing. In fact, there's been a move in the Swiss parliament to get a vote, a referendum, I don't know which, I can't remember, of banning the possibility that the Swiss legislature would sell the remaining gold that Switzerland has. They're quite concerned about that. But that's what I'll be talking about in the next issue. And, of course, gold and silver as we go along. I think this is the third correction in a couple of months, all man-made by Washington. And they're going to go right back up again. The first two did. The second one actually hit a new high. What was it? 1923.70, I think the figure was. I still have my photographic memory. And this one's going to go right back up again, too. Just an interlude. And it was to offset all of the bad news that was coming out of Europe, which was preceded by the bad news which accompanied the folderol concerning the debt extension. And there'll be more things like that. They're going to continue to try to manipulate. And I noticed that this time when they took the prices down, that is your government, what they did is they forced people, I guess, to line up by the thousands all over the world trying to buy all the gold and silver they could get their hands on at these unnaturally low prices that they helped to create, which they've been doing for 20 years. And so take advantage of it, because opportunities like that don't come often, where you get a chance to buy gold and silver $300 lower for gold and $16 lower for silver, or in that general area, when it's going to go right back up again. They can't stop it. People are leaving currencies all the time. I mean, look at the Swiss did. I mean, the most powerful, best currency in the world. They're destroying it. So who would want to be in currencies except to run your business, run your household, and all the rest of it should go in gold and silver coins, bullion, and shares. And that's the place to be. It's the safest place to be.
Well, they can do all their shenanigans and tricks to try to keep gold down, but we all know where it's going in the long run, and the only safe store of value in times like these really are gold and silver. So I hope people are investing what they can and what they have in that. Well, it sounds like a good issue or two coming up here for the Forecaster, so I hope people are subscribed and they can follow along, and we'll be back next Monday to talk about those latest developments and others. So Bob Chapman, always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Corbett Report.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for listening. Obviously, I love doing it, and I hope I help. Thank you, and I'll see you again next week.